Okay, Torah Jazz, Session 3, Dvarim, Deuteronomy, Mishnah Torah, the repetition of the Torah. As Americans, we love things which are doubled, double stuff Oreos, double-header baseball games, spearmint, double mint gum. So certainly, we would love a double dose of Torah. The question that everybody sort of grapples with is trying to understand what Mishnah Torah is all about. Like, what's the point? Why are we repeating stuff that we already said? Of course, it's said a little bit differently. There's different nuance that in itself needs to be understood, but this is the only book in the Torah which is stylistically different in a few ways. First of all, we certainly see there's a new tone, there's a new quality to the way things are being said. There's tochachas from Moshe Rabbeinu, more consistently than we've seen them in the past. There's a lot of direct speech between God and Moshe and the Jewish people. But, you know, in the other four books, it's a lot of Yidaber Shem El Moshe Lemor, which we don't really see here in Mishnah Torah. Either God's talking to Moshe or Moshe's talking to us, but not the channel of God to Moshe, Moshe to us. There's also a lot of nostalgic recollections of things that we had done in the past. There's repetitions of mitzvahs that we've already spoken about. And there are only a handful of new mitzvahs which we've never seen before. So what is it about Mishnah Torah? Well, first of all, also we know that we're in a new location, right? We're not in the Midbar, and we're not in Eretz Yisrael yet. We're in Arvos Moav. So what is it about Arvos Moav? What is it about this book of Mishnah Torah that's different? What is it all about? Why do we have it? Okay, let's just, you know, without speaking about any Meforshim or any Chazal, just from our own understanding, take a look. First of all, we know that this is a new generation, right? The Dor Midbar, the Dor of the Yotzei Mitzrayim are all gone now. This is specifically the Dor, the generation of the Boyo Eretz, those who are going into Eretz Yisrael. Another thing is that we also see that the generation actually already, the old generation, had already all been gone at the end of Parshas Bamidbar, but we still had the Milchemes Sichon and Og, the wars of Sichon and Og, to go through. So really, this is after the wars of Sichon and Og, meaning it's the last possible step before going into Eretz Yisrael, right? After this, there's just the battles for Eretz Yisrael itself. So it's sort of a lull in between, I guess, the process of the desert and the process of Eretz Yisrael, which is about to begin. Okay, so the first major daya over here is the Ramban and his Hakdama, his introduction to Dvarim. So it's really interesting, the way he described it. He's saying that the reviews over here and the Musar over here are coming to serve one purpose. Let's just say it this way. The Ramban points out that in Mishnah Torah, we don't speak about the halachas of the Mishkan, we don't speak about the Tum and Tahara of Kohanim, anything that has to do with the Kahuna and the Mishkan, the Korbanos, is not mentioned in Mishnah Torah. So the Ramban's understanding that the whole thing then is for everybody else in the Bnei Yisrael. So he's understanding that Sefer Dvarim is, if we would give it a name, I think, according to the Ramban, we'd call it Sefer Hazrizus. The Moshe Rabbeinu is coming to be Mezarez. He's coming to get the nation to be more fastidious, more expeditious, if those are the appropriate art scroll words over here, right? And that's what the whole thing is all about. He's repeating these mitzvahs to get us pumped up, to get us, you know, ready to do mitzvahs, and he's giving us musar. Now, the first question to ask in the Ramban is, well, okay, but Jews always need musar, don't we, right? We're supposed to have a musar seder every day. Why isn't Moshe Rabbeinu pumping us up for mitzvahs, repeating mitzvahs, giving us the special rebukes, right, the special musar, all over the Chumash? We need it everywhere. Why do we specifically need it now? So I think the Ramban is very much a shitaso over here. As the Ramban points out in a few places, although he's always referencing back to the same place over there in Vayikra, that according to the Ramban, the Iker Kiyum of mitzvos is in Eretz Yisrael. The reason we do mitzvos in Chutz La'aretz is so we don't forget them, they don't become foreign to us when we come to Eretz Yisrael. To go into the exact pshat, the depth of the Ramban, we're not going to do what the Ramban really means. What does it mean when you do a mitzvah in Chutz La'aretz? But we definitely see from the Ramban that the Iker Kiyum of mitzvos is in Eretz Yisrael. There's something special about Eretz Yisrael. There's something about the connection of Shemayim and Arts, of heavens and earth over there, that's where the major, really the ultimate place for doing mitzvahs is really in Eretz Yisrael. So then we understand very clearly why Moshe is coming to give us, to be mezarez us, because this is the first time that we're really going to be doing mitzvahs in the most complete way. It's in Eretz Yisrael. Up until now, we were just getting used to it. We were just practicing, right? Once we're in Eretz Yisrael, that's where we're really going to be ultimately doing mitzvahs the way they're meant to be done. So that's why we need Jesus. Now, it could be, by the way, interestingly enough, the Ramban understands that the Kohanim don't need this Zrizus because they're already Zrizim. Now, that may actually tell us something a little bit about the Mishkan. Right, because I think part of the point is we need Jesus not only because we're doing mitzvahs in that way for the first time, but also because, right, Eretz Yisrael, the difference between Eretz Yisrael, the difference between the land of Israel and the desert, was that in the desert, the Ashkacha Pratis, the divine hand of God, was much more visible in day-to-day life. Masha'en came that, which is not the case in Eretz Yisrael, where the whole point of it was that God's hand is more hidden. So it could be that we need that Zrizus, right, to motivate ourselves in mitzvahs, even though we don't see God everywhere. And the Kohanim, since part of the Kohanim's existence was constantly being in the Mishkan, constantly being in the Beis HaMikdash, they were always in touch with the Shekhinah. It wasn't as hidden. They didn't need that level of Zrizus, right? They had a much more palpable, much more accessible connection to Hashem. And that's an important point, which we're going to have to revisit, actually, a few times. Okay, the one thing about the Ramban gives a beautiful pshat. The one thing which is a little bit difficult about the Ramban is the fact that it doesn't necessarily clarify why mitzvahs are being repeated with different nuances, with different twists. Meaning the repetition of the mitzvahs is great, but there's also chidushim that are coming out from the way that Moshe is repeating them. And if it was just for Zrizus, so it's hard to understand where these chidushim, where these twists are coming from. So there's actually a Rashi and a Tosfos which the Achronim rely on over very heavily. Let's actually just start with the Gemara. It's a Gemara in Megillah. It's the second to last Amud of Megillah of Masechet Megillah over there, which is trying to explain why we have a different minhag for the klalos, for the curses in Toras Kohanim over there in Parshas Bechukosai and Vayikra. And the way that the klalos are said over here in Parshas Kisavo in Mishneh Torah. So the Gemara, one of the two answers that the Gemara gives, one answer that the Gemara gives is that over in Vayikra, Moshe said them mipi gvura, right? He said them from Hashem. Over here in Bamidbar, he said them mipi atzmo. Now, that's very difficult because why is it one of the books of the Chumash, right? It would be nice if we had a little Musar book for Moshe Rabbeinu or a Halacha book for Moshe Rabbeinu. But to make it part of the Chumash means that it has to be through Nevuah. So what does it mean that the Gemara is saying that Mishneh Torah is Mipi Atma. So we have a Rashi over there. So Rashi points out something that we pointed out about the stylistic difference between Mishneh Torah and the rest of the Chumash. And that's the fact that most of the rest of the Chumash is spoken in first person, meaning that Moshe is speaking in the voice of God, right? God is speaking to us directly, right? And here in Mishneh Torah, Moshe is speaking in third person. He's speaking about God, right? And how God relates to us, as opposed to direct first voice of God Himself speaking. And Tosfos there adds over there what we spoke about, although the Chronim uses it a little bit differently. Tosfos adds there Uberuach HaKodesh. And of course, Moshe is speaking Baruch HaKodesh. He's not, you know, making it up. He's speaking Baruch HaKodesh. Now, the thing is that everywhere, as we pointed out, in the Chumash has to be Baruch HaKodesh. What's Tosfos over here really adding? Well, really, the mesh of this Tosfos and this Rashi together, that stylistically it's different, and still, right, it's coming through the third person, not first person. It still is through Baruch HaKodesh. So what exactly does that mean? So if you look over in the Chumash Hagra, there's a blurb there. The first little piece is from the Magid Midubna. The Dubna Magid was a Talmud of the Gra, and he said that he asked the Gaon, "What is Mishneh Torah? What is it? What's it all about?" And the Gaon answered him that in the first four books of the Torah, the way that the prophecy worked, and we're going to have to over here say Le'havdil Elef Alfe Havdolos over here, okay? Prophecy was live stream. That is to say that Moshe was speaking as he was receiving the prophecy. It was as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was speaking in his throat. Right? Everything was coming a direct stream from Hashem through Moshe. Moshe was just a medium for which things could pass through. Now, this book, Mishneh Torah, Moshe is prophesying like Shar Nevi'im, like the rest of the prophets. This is to say he's still on a higher level of prophecy, and that Moshe Rabbeinu sees prophecy through Aspaklaria Ham'ira, right, the clear looking glass, or whatever, how we're going to translate Aspaklaria, just so we don't think it's Alice in Wonderland over here. Whereas the rest of the prophets are seeing Aspaklar She'enem Me'ira, right? They're seeing it through a lower level of prophecy. But the point is that prophets don't prophesy in the midst of the prophetic vision they're having. That is only the unique ability of Moshe Rabbeinu. And so here, in Mishneh Torah, it's all the prophecies that Moshe had received in the past. Only he's not in the midst of saying them. He's saying them on his own now. Okay. So we're saying that Dvarim is totally unique and that it's not direct prophecy. Now, why not? Why isn't it direct prophecy? Right? What is it about, say, for Dvarim being in Arvus Moav that, you know, things are different? Now, we could say, I think, very Pashut, right? Very straightforward answer. Is that Arvus Moav is something which is unique. It's nishtahin, nishtaher. It has some kedusha because of the conquest of the Jewish people, right? Because of the kivush ha'aretz. But it's not Eretz Yisrael, but it's also not the Midbar. It's something in the middle. It's a transition period. It's a time where we're leaving the cocoon of the Midbar, right? And so the Torah is less direct. The relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is less direct. Moshe Rabbeinu is easing us in to the reality of Eretz Yisrael, where our connection to Torah is going to be totally different. Remember, after Moshe Rabbeinu is Nifter, that is it for Torah B'Shamayim, meaning to say it's the last time anybody can clarify Halacha al pi Nevuah, through Nevuah, right? That's the Gemara over there in Tmura on Daf Ted Zion, where after Moshe Rabbeinu dies, they lost 3,000 halachos, and they came to Yehoshua. They asked him to retrieve them. Or actually, there's two different versions of the events, and that and the version where they went to Yeshua, Moshe Rabbeinu asked Yeshua if he wanted to clarify anything before he died. Yeshua said, "Me, I'm always been by your side, right? All these years, Moshe Rabbeinu, you said that about me yourself, right? That I'm always with you. I've never left your side." And because of that, actually, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes Yeshua and he forgets. Let's see if I can remember what it was. 200. Okay, I don't remember exactly what it was that Yehoshua forgets. I think some 800 halachos, and the Jewish people come to Yehoshua and they're very upset, and they say, "Get them back, you know, do the nevuah thing, get them back." And Yehoshua says, "I'm sorry, can't a navi can't add to halacha, right? We're already at that point in the stage of the fact that Torah is here, and we have to whatever we have." So this is the last time when they have the ability to clarify. They're so connected to Har Sinai, and they're so connected to the Koach of Nevuah, still to Shras HaShchinah, still that they can actually clarify Torah through Nevuah. But after Moshe Rabbeinu's Nifter, once they're in the land of Israel, that's it. You can no longer use prophecy even to clarify Halacha, right? And the Chiddush over by Yehoshua is even retrieving halacha that you once knew, right? Even to retrieve a halacha that you just forgot, you cannot use nevuah to retrieve a halacha that even if you knew it before. So that could help us to understand why the nevuah is different, why Moshe's style is different over here. But it doesn't actually help us to understand why there's repetitions, why things are said now with different nuances, or why there are so many tochachos. That doesn't help us to understand this period of transition. So for this, in steps the Netziv. And Netziv is Agdama to Sefer Dvarim. It's not just the Agdama, it's also the first few psukim. But in the Agdama, he points out there that Mishnah Torah is not just the same thing as we had before, right? Not like the double stuffed Oreo we spoke about, which is just more cream, but twice as much. Although I don't think that's just double. I think once you put in double cream, it's already exponentially better. But anyways, here Mishnah Torah means something else. Mishnah Torah here means that we're actually adding a new element to the Torah. And the Netziv holds that the entirety of Mishnah Torah is actually the Talmud. What do I mean by the Talmud? Meaning that up until now, the Jewish people had the written Torah, and we even had some element of Torah Shebaal Peh, right? We had to know certain elements of Torah Shebaal Peh, right? That's a given. Just the classic proofs for Torah Shebaal Peh. That the Torah never tells us what tefillin look like, what they're made out of, what color they are. Shechita, we would never know how to do shechita, right? All the different elements of Torah Shebaal Peh. There were certain elements of Torah Shebaal Peh that we had to know. But to clarify the halacha within the verses, to use the Yud Gimel Midos Shatar Nidreshes Behem, right? To understand the Midos of Haggadata, to know how to develop halacha, that's all Talmud, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is now saying things differently. That is to say, saying the psukim with new nuances, with different twists, because the Netziv holds everything that Moshe Rabbeinu taught over in Mishnah Torah were tools that he needed in order to teach the Jewish people how to use Talmud. Meaning up to now, if you could picture such a thing, they had Chumash. And up to now, if you could picture such a thing, they had Mishnayos. The little boys were running around, and they were doing Mishnayos tests, and they were getting mun that tasted like taffies. But they never had Talmud, which means that the Kitahe boys were bored. They never had Talmud. This was the first time that Moshe Rabbeinu was actually showing them how within Psukim you can develop Halacha. Okay. Now there's three different possibilities, actually, when Moshe Rabbeinu taught them the Pilpulim of Torah. And so the Netziv is going to have to deal with that. There's a Sifri, which implies that actually Moshe taught them Pilpulim right away, that everything came together. The Chumash, the Mishnah, and the Pilpul all happen in one shot. Right? Okay, so there you go. Moshe Rabbeinu opened the first Aliba d'Hilchas HaKolel. Now, the other possibility, there's a Braisa and a Chagiga and Sota, which speaks about the fact that they were taught once, and then it was Mashuna and Mashulash. It was repeated and it was tripled. So the Netziv understands that that's the process of unfolding of the Torah that we spoke about, that Moshe Rabbeinu taught to them once from Har Sinai. He just taught them the Chumash aspect of it. In Oel Moed, in the Tent of Assembly, Tent of Assembly, well, this is fun. Everything's about school today, right? Everybody loves an assembly. In the Tent of Assembly, he doubled it. That is to say, he gave them the Mishnah. But in Arvos Moav, he was Mishulashit. He tripled it. That's when he taught them Talmud. And then the first possibility is that right away they learned everything. The third possibility that it was broken up into 1, 2, 3, Har Sinai, Oel Moed, and Arvos Moav, Chumash Mishneh Torah. And the third possibility is actually the Gemara and the Dharma over there on Daf Lamed Ches, if I'm not mistaken, that said over there that the drasha comes from Psalicha. Psalicha, we know that when Moshe Rabbeinu carved the Luchos, Psalicha, Shapsolas Shalcha. The Psolas belongs to you, Moshe, keep the Psolas. What about Ksavlicha? What about when Hashem says to Moshe, Ksavlicha? Moshe can't keep the Ksav. The ink's going to stay in his pockets. So in there, we're understanding that there's an element of Torah, which is only for Moshe Rabbeinu, which the Gemara understands is the Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, of course, as we've pointed out, right? Oh, sorry, let's finish the idea. That would mean to say that the Torah Shebaal Peh is for Moshe Rabbeinu, and not for the Jewish people. And the Gemara there says that it's only because Moshe Rabbeinu had the very special mitzvah of Ayin Tova that he actually decided to give us the Torah Shebaal Peh. But Hashem did not intend for us to have the Torah Shebaal Peh. It was meant for Moshe Rabbeinu, and it was Moshe Rabbeinu's decision that he wanted to give us the Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, as we pointed out earlier, it can't be that the whole Torah Shebaal Peh was meant to be for Moshe, and we weren't going to get anything, because that would be a really weird and confusing Judaism. We'd have a lot of things that we'd just be clueless about. People would be like, what are Totafot? And they'd say, I don't know. And, you know, some people would go about with, you know, I don't know, sunglasses on their arms. Who knows? But this means that Moshe Rabbeinu had some aspect of Torah Shebaal Peh which we didn't need. And what is that? The conclusion of the Gemara over there, it is the Pilpulim. That is to say that the Pilpul of Torah was only for Moshe Rabbeinu and his offspring. And it was through Ayin Tova that he decided to give it over to us. Okay, we're going to go back to that Gemara and get to it a little bit more deeply. However, the point is that we see that according to the first approach in the Sifri, everything was right away. In the Braisa, it was broken down, 1, 2, 3. According to the Gemara and the Nedarim, what it means is that whether or not everything was given in one shot or broken up, 1, 2, but Hashem did not intend for there to be a step 3. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's choice. Right? And that was an Arvos Moav. Moshe Rabbeinu decides that he's going to go ahead and give us a Torah Shebaal Peh. So all three of them are going to lead us back to our question, which is, okay, so what's so special about Arvos Moav, other than the rafting, which I'm sure was great? So according to the Sifri, why are we repeating all these halachos, right? Right? In the Netziv's approach, the Sifri is telling us that we've already learned all the Pilpulim of Torah. So if we've already learned all the Pilpulim of Torah, why is Moshe Rabbeinu coming back and repeating all this Pilpul, right? Giving us this shir that we've already heard again in Arvos Moav. What are we gaining through this repetition? So the Netziv is actually coming off of the Pasuk over here. He's actually not just coming off his pasuk, but he's explaining the pasuk two different ways. The first one according to Rashi, and the second one He's going to go off the Gemara over there in Nedarim. So at the beginning of Dvarim, right, the point where we're speaking about is Vayhi Barboim Shana Bashteasar Chodesh Bechad Lachodesh Dibir Moshe B'nei Yisrael Kichol Asher Tziva Shemasa Aleihem. Oh, sorry, there we go. Vayvar Yarden Beretz Moav, right, in the far side of the Jordan, in the land of Moav. Hoyil Moshe Be'eres HaTorah Hazos Lemor. Hoyil, Moses clarified this Torah to say. What is a hoyil? So Rashi says that a hoyil is he began. It's a beginning, right? So the Netziv says, okay, so Rashi's going with a Sifri, right? That from the beginning, Moshe had already taught them all these things. And therefore, the book of Mishnah Torah is, similar to the Ramban now, going to become a book of Zrizus. Moshe is being Mizarez, the Jewish people. He's giving them a chazar. He's saying, look, it's your last shot. Let's talk about Pilpul. Let's review it again. Let's go back. Was there some aspect of the Pilpul you didn't understand? Is there anything missing, right? He's going back and he's reviewing all the concepts, the basic building blocks of Pilpul. Now, we're going to have to then go back to the same question that we asked in the Ramban, which is, Zrizus is always good. We could always use Chizuk and Zrizus. Well, first of all, okay, we see that he's not being Mizaris on the Torah Shebiksav. He's being Mizaris on the Torah Shebal Peh, right, on the Pilpulim. But second of all, you could always be Mizaris on the Pilpulim, right, going according to the opinion that we've already learned the Pilpulim. Why now? What's so special about Arvus Moab that now Moshe Rabbeinu is going back and giving us Chizuk and Zrizus on the Pilpulim? Right? Even Dor Midbar could use that. So, could be, according to the Gemara in Brachos, right? We see that Gimel Dvarim Niknim B'Yisurim. There are three things that we have to acquire through Yisurin. Torah, Eretz Yisrael, Olam Haba. Right? Those are our three things. Now, the basic understanding is that those three things are three things which it's not intuitive, necessarily, what's so great or what's so special about them. That is to say, obviously, Olam Haba is great and special, but we don't grasp it. It's hard to understand what Olam Haba is supposed to be. It's so surreal, it's so abstract, that it's hard for us to really appreciate its value, and therefore it's only through Yisurim that we're really going to understand. Eretz Yisrael, right? Same thing. Eretz Yisrael seems like a really nice place to visit. You know, this is what's funny when people talk about Eretz Yisrael, for me it's very hard, this concept of loving Eretz Yisrael, because, well, what is it that you love? You love the fact that the people here are nice, you like the fact that they have good stores here, that the tourism's interesting, that there's, you know, fun activities, the culture, like, what is it? You know, all these things aren't the Eretz Yisrael aspect that's supposed to be meaningful to us. The Eretz Yisrael aspect that's supposed to be meaningful to us is what the Ramban was telling us. There's a special kedusha, there's a special hashgacha, right? This is the place where Kosh Baruch Hu's eyes are on, metaphorically, all the year round. That's this part of Eretz Yisrael, which is, you know, that's what Eretz Yisrael is. So that part's very hard to grasp. And therefore, it's only through Yisurin, right, that we start to appreciate a little bit of that fact that Eretz Yisrael is so special. Now, what about Torah? Right? Torah seems to be very different because every culture in the world has, every religion has their law book, right? Their book of values, their book of rules. So why is it that Torah is only nikneh, is only acquired through Yisurim? That seems to be something not abstract. That's very concrete. How can you live day-to-day life without having a Torah in front of you? So I think intuitively we want to say that that Torah must mean Torah Shebal Peh, right? Torah Shebal Peh is the difficult, hard-to-grasp element of Torah. It's the abstract part of Torah. It's not the written words in front of you, right, where we can see God telling us, you know, to do the basic mishpatim. It's what we would almost at times call the theoretical aspects of Torah, even though obviously we don't believe in purely theoretical Torah. It all comes to applied. But some of the situations in the Torah Sheba'al Peh seem so outlandish that we would almost look at them as academic exercises. And of course, nowadays, some of our Torah Sheba'al Peh is academic just in the fact that there are a lot of halachos that we cannot do nowadays in our present gula situation. So I think, though, however, just to bring a raya to this idea, is the Gemara over there in Kiddushin, over at the end of the first parak, where we see that Torah becomes yours only through Yegiyah, right? Talmid Chachamim only are kona Torah, they only acquire it through Yegiyah. Now, the Pashas of Yegiyah is Pilpul, right? You could say that Yegiyah is also just Mesiras Nefesh, and it could be that there is some lower element of a kinyan of Torah through Mesiras Nefesh, but it's the Pilpul of Torah that makes it yours. Why? Because the Torah Shebiksav, or even Mishnayos, you open up and you read, you learn, you understand. But to see where the Mishnah comes from, to find it in the Psukim, the Milchemta Shel Torah, the back and forth, the finding the Pshat, that's your personal effort, that's your work in order to get there, that's your Yegiyah by straining your intellect to find the Pshat. You're actually being kona the Torah. You're making the Torah yours. You're making it uniquely yours. You're possessing it in a way that before it was just information in a book, and now you've made it part of you. Okay, so therefore, it's hard. It's abstract. It's difficult. The Yud Gimel Midos are difficult and abstract, right? The Torah Sheba'al Peh has some very difficult abstract elements to it that the Torah Shebiksav doesn't have. And therefore, it's Davka at Arvos Moav, when Moshe's reviewing, repeating for us this thing. But the point is that Torah Sheba'al Peh needs a special Zrizus, which the Torah Shebiksav doesn't need. Now, that doesn't answer totally, right, why this generation needs the Zeros and the Dor Midbar doesn't, considering that they all learn Torah Sheba'al Peh. So they should all need Zrizus, right? Okay. So let's go over to the last pshat that we spoke about, the Gemara Nedarim over there, right? Here, the Netziv is going to understand that hoil, yeah, the word hoil in the Pasuk, hoil Moshe beres HaTorah, means that Moshe desired to clarify the Torah. He had the ratzon to now go into the pilpulim, meaning up until now, Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching them Torah and Mishnah. They knew Psak Halacha. They knew what they had to do, but they didn't get the kishkas. And up until now, Moshe didn't want to give them the kishkas. Now, in Arvos Moav, he decided this was the right time to give them the kishkas of the Torah. And that is going to lead us to ask, well, what is it about Arvos Moav that now was the right time? And the Dor Midbar, he couldn't do it. It was useless, right? Okay, so this is not from within the Netziv, right? We're saying, trying to understand the Netziv. Okay, well, actually, let's go back to the Netziv for a second. The Netziv understands, in general, the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu has to teach them Torah Sheba'al Peh before they go into the land of Israel. Now, this is not necessarily in the third pshat, and I'll explain to you in a second why. Is because when the previous generation, the generation of the Midbar, sinned in the sin of the Meraglim, at that point, the 40 years that was Nigzar, the 40-year decree of staying in the desert, came along with it a decree of Galus. At that point, it was Nigzar, it was decreed, that the Jews would have to go into exile. Now, to me, it's not clear if the Netziv has a specific makor for this, other than the way he's understanding the pshat in the Pasuk. However, I do want to give you guys one bit of a raya from Rashi, that there is some element over here, another element as well. Okay, so over in Akev, in the eighth parak, in the second verse, it says, "V'zachartes kol derech asher alichcha Hashem Elokecha ze'arboim shon." Remember this whole path that God took you through these 40 years by Midbar in the desert. Why did he do it? Laman anoscha lenasoscha. He wanted to. How do we translate this word? Afflict you, to test you. Ladas es asher bilvavecha, to know whether it's in your heart. Hatishmir mitzvosav imlo, to follow his mitzvos or no. Okay, so very interestingly, it says that the whole point of the 40 years was a test, right? Why 40 years, right? Why couldn't God do it 1 year, 2 years? The whole 40 years was a test, because the Gemara says that after 40 years, a person, if his Rebbe's not around, stops following his Rebbe. So the thing was a test. Could they make it 40 years and still keep the mitzvos, right? Even though they're just wandering in the desert. Meaning, seemingly, they haven't reached their tachlis. They haven't reached their tafkid. There are certain mitzvos they'll never get to do at all. And with a nuance of the Ramban over here, the ikar kum of the mitzvos, right? The main, the most powerful way to do mitzvos is in the land of Israel. They'll never get to do it. They'll be in the desert for the rest of their lives. Will they come to hate God in their hearts? Doing mitzvos in a situation which is a less than ideal circumstance. Yes, they were able to do it, and therefore Kadosh Baruch Hu understood that they could go into Gullus and they could receive a tikkun through going into Gullus. We'll talk a little bit also, hopefully, about the tikkun of Gullus as well. I don't know what would have happened had they not passed the test. That's a great question. But the Netziv is saying that the whole point of it, or I think the point is that Kadosh Baruch Hu knew that they were going to pass the test, and he brings here, the truth is he brings here the Bereishis Rabbah about the three reasons Kadosh Baruch Hu gives you a nisayon, this one being the second reason, to test the strength of the kli, which is obviously not for Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows the strength of the kli. It's for us to know that we can survive Gullus. We can look back to the Dor Midbar and say, look, if they could do it, we can do it. We have the kelim to make it through Gullus. Okay, so the whole point of the 40 years was to see that the Jewish people could go through Gullus, and from there Netziv understands that Gullus was already in the cards for the Jewish people at the moment that the generation of the Meraglim happened, because otherwise how is the Kadosh Baruch Hu going to test them, right? So it must be that he wasn't going to test them because it wasn't going to happen. So at this point he needs to test them. It means that Gullus was bound to happen. You also see, by the way, that Rashi points out that Moshe Rabbeinu for these 38 years is speaking in Lashon, does no longer receives Hashem through Lashon V'yidaber, but it's only through Lashon Lemor or Amira, right? That Moshe Rabbeinu is on a much lower level of connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu. He no longer can speak to Kadosh Baruch Hu panim al panim, face to face, the entire 38 years of the generation is in the Midbar, meaning that even though they're in the Midbar, they're already in Gullus. There's an element of Gullus already in that generation of the Midbar. So now this whole element of Gullus has come into the Jewish people, and it's always going to be there now. The tikkun for the Jewish people has to come through Gullus. So at this point, Moshe Rabbeinu understands that he has to give them Torah Shebaal Peh. Or if the Torah Shebaal Peh was already given to them, he has to be mechazik. He has to be mizdarez on the Torah Shebaal Peh. Why? So the Netziv says the Torah Shebaal Peh does two things. First of all, it strengthens Torah, right? It makes Torah part of the culture, right? Everybody talks about how did the Jewish people survive all these centuries? Oh, because we had the Talmud, right? That's the first thing. It creates a culture of Torah. It creates a nationality of Torah. It strengthens our connection to Torah. So that's the first way the Torah Shebaal Peh helps us to survive the Gullus. But the second thing is that when we were living in Eretz Yisrael, right, whenever there were any halachic issues or questions, we had a Sanhedrin, we had a Kohen Gadol, and there was a koach to the Sanhedrin, there was a koach to the Kohen Gadol to paskin halacha for us. right? And that would clarify all of our halachic problems. Now, what happens when you go to Golos? You don't have a Sanhedrin. You don't have a Kohen Gadol. Moshe Rabbeinu had to give us, no matter which way you look at it, a sort of Judaism which was portable. What do I mean by that? That means to say, when you live in Eretz Yisrael, Torah is easy, right? You don't need to create a culture of Torah. Yahadus, Yiddishkeit, Judaism is easy. You're surrounded by Jews. Aliyah L'Regel, millions of Jews going to the base of Mikdash together, standing in the base of Mikdash, watching the incredible miracles of the base of Mikdash. Nevi'im, prophets, right? All the things about Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to Golos, right, is that the Judaism surrounds you. You live in it. This is the challenge, of course, of Israelis, right, who live in Eretz Yisrael and then go to America. They were never given the tools to build their own. I don't mean here religious Israelis. I mean secular Israelis who were never given the tools to create their own Judaism. Their Judaism was experiential by their surroundings. So when they change the surroundings, unfortunately, they lose their Judaism. When they go into Golos, they don't have the tools to create their own Judaism, and sadly, they lose it. So the Torah Sheba'al Peh, basically what we see, is a Judaism that is portable. And the reason it's portable is because it doesn't need a place. It doesn't need a culture. You create the Torah. You don't need a Mikdash. You don't need a Sanhedrin. You don't need a Kohen Gadol. If you have Torah Sheba'al Peh, you have an entire religion that you are self-generating. Now, let's go back and try to understand a bunch of the questions that we had asked previously. Okay, the Gemara Nedarim says that Moshe only gives us the pilpul from Ayin Tova. Now, it sounds over here like you don't need Ayin Tova for this sort of a recognition, desire to give the Torah Sheba'al Peh. If we're saying the Torah Sheba'al Peh is how you survive a Golos, why do we need Ayin Tova, which is one of the highest midos a person can have, right? Ayin Tova is not a straightforward thing. This is a special midah of Moshe Rabbeinu. We could just say because Moshe was a nice guy, because Moshe cared about the Jewish people, because Moshe did chesed, right? Because Moshe wasn't stingy, right? Why do we have to get to Ayin Tova? It's such a deep midah for Moshe to decide that he should give us the Torah. Even Lev Tov, let's just go one level down, just Lev Tov, a desire to give, right? Let's just go from there. Why do you need Ayin Tova to decide to give the Torah to the Jewish people? Okay, so here we're going to veer off a little bit. Who were the Dor HaMidbar, right? Why is it that according to this third pshat, the Gemara Nedarim, Moshe had no desire to give the Dor HaMidbar? Like, why not? They're nice people. They made a mistake, but they're not bad people, right? And they're definitely not stupid people. Why can't you give them the pilpul of Torah? So Dor HaMidbar has a special koach, and that is the koach of Naseh V'Nishma. Dor HaMidbar was the ones who said, Naseh V'Nishma, we will do and we will listen, right? And they got two ketarim for that. They got a keser of Naseh and a keser of Nishma. The fact that they were willing to do the Torah without even learning what was in it first, a tremendous dedication, level of connection to Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem, we don't care. Whatever you say, we're going to do it. Now, there is a stira to Naseh V'Nishma, which is the fact that when it says that Klai Yisrael were waiting Mitachas Ahar, the Medrash tells us that Kodesh Baruch Hu was Kafal Aleim Har Kegigis. Rashi brings that Medrash over there. Kodesh Baruch Hu had to hang the mountain Har Sinai over the Jewish people and say to them, if you're going to be Makabel of the Torah, if you're going to receive the Torah, great. If not, this will be your grave. Harsh words for a generation who just said Naseh V'Nishma. So the Tanhuma comes to resolve this problem. How could it be that the Jewish people said Naseh V'Nishma? And at the same token, we said that if they don't receive, God had to threaten them, right, to receive the Torah. So the Tanchuma answers that Naaseh V'Nishma was Torah Shebal Peh. The Jewish people said Torah Shebal Peh and Naaseh V'Nishma. We'll do it. No problem. We don't care what's inside. You say we should do it. We'll do it. Kaf Aleihem Har Kegigis is going on the Torah Shebal Peh. The Jewish people did not want to be Makabel the Torah Shebal Peh. Why not? Says the Gemara. It was too, the Medrash says it was too hard. Now, when you read this Medrash, it's like, what? Right? Like, what? It was too hard. What do you mean the Torah Shebal Peh was too hard? I mean, yeah, it was hard, but come on, you know, for Kosh Baruch we could do it, right? Like, why not? Like, we're used to hard things. We just came out of Shibud. We don't mind a little bit of work. So the way that I understand the notion of it being too much of a tircha for the Jewish people to learn the Torah Shebal Peh is the fact that this generation, the Dor Midbar, their Mila and their Chisaron came together. This was a generation of Shibud. They were primed for Shibud. They, whatever happened in Mitzrayim, they didn't have time for Nasa, for Nishma V'Nasa. Everything in Mitzrayim was Nasa V'Nishma. The whole process of the Asaras HaMakos, the Esar Makos, and going through leaving Mitzrayim, the Yam Suf, Maimed Har Sinai, it was all to move the Shibud over to Kosh Baruch Hu. Right? The understand that you have to be Meshubad to something. Every action is Meshubad to something. That our Shibud is to Kosh Baruch Hu, to spirituality, not to physicality, right? To Hashem. So the mile of this generation was the mile of Yiras Hashem. They had tremendous Yiras Hashem. They felt incredible awe for Kodesh Baruch Hu. What's interesting about this is that a lot of the tochachos in Dvarim over here is Moshe is telling the Jewish people that they had tremendous Yiras Hashem, but they lacked Avas Hashem. One example is over in Ves. I don't remember if the Rashi is in Ves Chan, if it's before that, where the Jewish people refused to hear all 10 Dibros from Akosh Baruch Hu. They say two's enough, the other 8 will hear from Moshe. So Moshe over there says, your Yiras Hashem is tremendous. Right? It's so difficult. Your fear of Romamus, your fear of God's exaltedness is so tremendous that it's hard for you to be close to Him because of your awe. But you also have to have Ahavas Hashem. You have to love Hashem so much that you would be willing to suffer in order to be close to Him. Right? Now, Rashi tells us that Ahavas Hashem is a necessary ingredient in success in Yiddishkeit. Meaning, had they been able to succeed, to make it through the Midbar and go to Eretz Yisrael, Rashi in our Parsha tells us that they would have done it without Milchama. They would never have had a war. They would have strolled right in. Meaning, if you have tremendous Yiras Hashem, right? So then the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives you everything you need. However, the problem with Yiras Hashem is that when the going gets tough, right, when you're overwhelmed in whatever your level is, and the Dor Midbar was a very high level, but if you don't have Ahava, you're not going to survive. You're not going to make it, right? When a teacher demands a lot of you, when your parents demand a lot of you, if your whole relationship to them is just through awe, just through reverence, at some point it may become too much, and there's no reason for you not to abandon them. It's Ahava, it's the love that connects you in the strongest way. So the generation of the Midbar was very good at Yira, but they lacked Ahava. When they failed in Yira, they had to earn the Ahava the hard way. Ahava means that I want to do things for Kodesh Baruch Hu. Let me explain what I mean by that. When they have Yira Hashem, they receive everything. The Asaras HaDibros, they receive them. Going into Eretz Yisrael, they receive them. They don't have to do anything to gain it. But they lacked Ahava. Ahava is not just that I have tremendous awe of you and so therefore you do everything, but I want to do things for you. I want to work for you. Because they couldn't do it through Yira, they had to build their own Ahava. Now they have to fight for the land of Eretz Yisrael. Now they have to fight for their Torah, right? It's not like Luchos Rishonos, where everything would have been clear to them without any work. Now they're going to have to read between the lines, build up their own Torah. Okay, so now we understand why this generation is different. This is a generation that's going the hard way. They're going to the land of Israel through Milchama. They're going to do for Hashem. Now, this is where Moshe's Ayin Tova comes into play. Moshe realizes that no matter what, he cannot give Pilpul of Torah to the generation of the Midbar. There's no point. It'll overwhelm them. It's too hard. It's too much. They can't do it. And they're not built for it. And they don't need it. This is not going to be their tikkun. However, with a generation coming into Eretz Yisrael, he can impress upon this generation the importance of Torah Shebaal Peh, even if they're not totally ready for it or totally want it. Right? The Ayin Tova was the recognition that they need it. He wants to give it to them. And now is the only moment where he could actually give it to them. The generation of the Midbar was a generation of Kafalem Harkagigis. They could not accept the Torah Shebaal Peh. It was too much. It was too hard to create your own Yiddishkeit, to generate your own connection to Kodesh Baruch Hu, to lack the clarity of strong nevuah of the Luchos Rishonos, to be in doubt and to work hard to try to understand certain pshatim, and even at the end not to have that same level of clarity. That's a hard Yiddishkeit. They weren't ready for it. They couldn't do it. This generation, Moshe realizes, now's my moment. I can talk to them about Gullus. I can talk to them about the hidden nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can tell them that without this you're going to fail. And even if it's hard for them, at least I can impress upon them a higher level of receiving of the Torah Shebaal Peh than the Kaf Alem Harkagigis, even if you want to understand that Kaf Alem Harkagigis is they understood that they didn't have a choice. But here, they have a choice, not all the choice in the world if they want to survive, but it's a much higher level of Bechira for them to accept willingly the Torah Shebaal Peh, even if not totally. Since we see that the full acceptance of the Pilpul of the Torah of the Torah Shebaal Peh didn't come till Purim, which was a total Hester Paniv of Hashem, that's when they finally understood why you need to have this other way to connect to Kodesh Baruch Hu of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, so we're almost at an hour. And also, it's a Erev Shabbos. There's things to do, but I quickly wanted to add one more element that to connect actually the Rashi on the Tuchachos to everything that we're speaking about on the idea of Torah Shebaal Peh. Why Torah Shebaal Peh has to happen now in Arvos Moav. Now the Chumash tells us that it's Bashteis Har Chodesh, right? It's the 11th month over here. In the 40th year. On the first of the month, that Moshe is giving them all this tochacha. So there's a Rashi over here, right? The Rashi says, why did Moshe give them tochacha so close, right? Why is he waiting till now, right? A week before he dies, that's when he's giving them tochacha, right? He could have given them tochacha before that, right? Why is he cutting it so close? Why is now the moment? So he says, no, actually, Moshe Rabbeinu learned from Yaakov, right? Or I guess really the problem in Rashi is he's teaching us why we care that it happened a week before his death. So Rashi's saying, because there's a whole point that you are supposed to give tochacha close to death. Where do we learn that from? We learn it from Yaakov. That Yaakov didn't give tochacha to his sons right until he was on his deathbed. So now Rashi says here that Yaakov understood that Amar Reuven, Bni, Ani omer lecha mipnei ma lo hukachticha kol hashonim. Why didn't Yaakov give Reuven to Chachim all these years? Why did he wait till his deathbed for an event that happened previously, right? Should have said it right away. What was he waiting for? Kadei shelo tanicheni v'telech v'tidbak be'esav achi. Because if I die, right, I'm sorry, if I give you tochacha, you will leave me aside, you will cast me off, and you will go cling to Esav, my brother. Now that's very difficult, right? Who are we talking about over here? We're talking about Yaakov and Reuven. Now most of us were worried, yeah, if I rebuke my child too harshly, maybe he'll get upset at me, maybe he'll run away, maybe he'll hate me. But we're talking about Yaakov and Reuven. We're talking about Yaakov, who certainly knows how to rebuke people in the most appropriate way possible. And we're talking about Reuven, who is the Bechor of Yaakov, right? We're talking about Tzaddikei Olam over here. Why is Yaakov so scared of giving Reuven tochacha? Yaakov knows how to give tochacha, and Reuven knows how to take tochacha. So Rashi brings over here 2 points from the 4 points, which are brought down in the Medrash. Right? Arba dvarmin mochichin es ha'adam ela samuch lamisa. Kedei shlo ye mochicho v'chozer mochicho. The first one is so you shouldn't give him rebuke and have to go back and give him rebuke again. V'shelo ye chavero ro'eu umitbayesh. And the second one is that he shouldn't see you every day and become embarrassed. Okay, so the two reasons that Rashi brings are the four that he feels are pertinent for us is one, so you shouldn't have to give rebuke, go back and rebuke, right? Because if I rebuke you and then tomorrow I catch you doing the same thing, I'm going to give you rebuke again. And the second one is that if I rebuke you today and then I see you tomorrow, you are going to be embarrassed every time you see me. So, okay, let's just push out let's just knock down the two kashas, right? The two obvious questions. The first one, mochich v'chozer mochicho, right? So I don't want to give you tochacha now because I'm going to see you for the next 20 years and every time you're going to do wrong, I have to give you tochacha again. But like, why not? What's wrong with that? If you're doing it wrong again, I should give you tochacha again. And on the flip side, why is it better when that person's dead, right? Okay, so now I'm dead, so you're still doing something wrong. I'm just not around to give you tochacha. What did we gain by giving the tochacha samach lemisa, right? Giving the rebuke close to death. Now, the second one is about the fact that Reuven would be embarrassed every time he sees Yaakov. I mean, why would he be embarrassed, right? He knows that Yaakov is the tzaddik ador. That's his father. His job is to give him tochacha. Reuven understands that tochacha, takes it, and he does it. So, okay, that's not so much of a kasha, I think, really, but just the point to be clarified. Okay, so the first one, yeah. So what's wrong with giving tochacha to a person again and again and again? Well, being since that we were all children at some point, and that many of us have children now, we know what happens when you hear the same tochacha over and over and over and over again. It loses its power. It becomes very dull. Oh boy, here goes Abba giving me that same rebuke again. Sit nicely in your chair. And at some point, you can actually see on the children that they've stopped listening. They just don't hear the tochacha anymore. In one ear, out the other ear, because they've heard it so many times, they're done. They're done hearing it. Okay, so then it sounds like maybe a feasible alternative would be then to just not give them tochacha. You said your tochacha, right? You made your point. You said it once. Why do you have to make it again? You know, Abba said something, right? Why do I have to repeat it 100 times? Can't you understand it the first time that I said it? So the reason is because, as we know, in Judaism we have a klal, we have a general principle, shtika ke hoda'o. If you see your child doing a rebuke-worthy thing, a tochacha-worthy thing, and you don't rebuke him, well then, in a way, he's getting used to seeing you doing this thing over and over and not saying anything. It's sort of like the Gemara in Kedushin that says that when a person does an Avera 3 times, he already matured it for himself. He already made it mutter, right? He's gotten used to doing this thing and without consequence. That became the new norm. So if a child is used to doing something wrong and every time he sees the parent and you're just looking and you're not doing anything, the child starts to think that, oh, maybe it's not so bad. So now we're stuck in a situation with when you are around and you're seeing the child, right, falling, stumbling in the same pattern over and over and over again, you're in a catch-22. Because if you don't give him tochacha, you're encouraging the behavior. And if you do give him tochacha, it becomes less potent. So that's to answer the first Rashi. When a person does it samuch lemisa, when they do it close to death, It gives the person the space to internalize the tochacha that you've given them, meaning you've said it once and you're not going to say it again, but the not saying it again is perforce of the fact that you're not going to be around, right? These are the last words that came from your father, where tochacha, they'll have a special potency, a special strength that you would not have otherwise. Okay, what about the busha? Now, I think that, you know, those of us who have had close relationships with people we really care about, with people we really respect, understand that even if the person knows how to rebuke you, is meant to rebuke you, is giving you the appropriate rebuke in the appropriate way, but because you love and respect this person so much, so deeply, right, you've been exposed, right? You know that they know that you're not perfect. And you'll always carry it around deep in your heart, right? That this person sees your pagam, sees your defect, your shortcoming. Especially, not only even Yaakov and Reuven, but especially Yaakov and Reuven, right? This is Yaakov Avinu, and Reuven knows that he's forever been exposed in his father's eyes, right? His father knows that he has this shortcoming and his father doesn't approve. That pain is a pain that will follow Reuven forever, every time he sees Yaakov. However, if it's something before that Yaakov says before he dies, and then Reuven gets to internalize that point, but he doesn't have to relive it every time he sees Yaakov looking at him. So tremendous sensitivity is obviously for us to take in about the koach of tochacha, how much tochacha affects people, right, to the point that Yaakov Avinu himself is nervous that by giving tochacha to Reuven at the wrong time, it's a greater risk than not giving tochacha at all, because maybe it'll be mekalkel him, maybe, right, it'll actually send them in a worse direction. So how much more so for us, and to consider this concept. But I wanted to connect it over here to the idea of Torah Sheba'al Peh as well. That why did Moshe Rabbeinu, just to go back and answer this big question that we've been working through in the Nativ, why did Moshe Rabbeinu wait till Arvus Moav, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was waiting for the last possible moment to give over the tools for Torah Sheba'al Peh to the Jewish people, because this was the most powerful and effective time to give it. This is the last gift of Moshe Rabbeinu. We know he's all about to go. It has so much greater weight, gravity, strength, power, the importance of Torah Sheba'al Peh. All the tochachas that we're getting are tochachas according to the Netziv about Torah Sheba'al Peh, to strengthen us in Torah Sheba'al Peh. And this is why Moshe Rabbeinu is waiting to Arvus Moav to give that. Okay, that's Mishneh Torah in a nutshell as far as we've explored it. And I hope everybody has a great Shabbos, and that we should this Motzei Shabbos see Bias Go Mashiach Tzidkenu, and celebrate Tisha B'Av as the Moad it was originally intended to be.